Podcast. This is episode 65 for May 25th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Cuba, Part 2. The revolution is just a Che t-shirt away. In episode 61 of this podcast, the editorial covered some of the current happenings in Cuba, like the change of power and the informal economy. In this editorial, we aim to take another look at Cuba, like some brief anarchist history and what freedom of expression looks like there through the music and bits of culture. First, let's dig into some Cuban anarchist history. Back in the days of Emma Goldman, around the late 1880s and 90s, the famous Cuban writer and revolutionary José Martí moved to New York City for a while and wrote about the New York City anarchists. Martí was not a big fan, but still wrote some intriguing commentary, like how the anarchists would gather in the streets every Sunday morning to shoot their guns, while everyone else was at church. Moving along some years, we have Frank Fernandez, who wrote the authoritative book Cuban Anarchism, The History of a Movement, detailing anarchism on the island. Then, in 1959, as everyone knows, things changed with the Cuban Revolution led by Fidel Castro and sidekick Ernesto Che Guevara, who was a Stalinist, executioner, and bureaucrat. In Saint Che, The Truth Beyond the Legend of the Heroic Guerrilla, Ernesto Che Guevara, by Larry Gambon, they write that Saint Che is implicated in the destruction of Cuban anarcho-syndicalism and Trotskyism as well. Cuba in the 1950s was the scene of the last of the great Latin American syndicalist movements. Libertarians controlled many trade unions and were an important anti-Batista force. The anarchists had survived the Machado and Batista dictatorships, but did not survive 2 years of Castroism. By 1962, the movement was down to 20 or 30 members, hundreds of others having fled into exile, imprisoned, or executed. For anyone still harboring any illusions about Che's alleged libertarianism, the following quote should put this to rest. Quote, "Individualism must disappear in Cuba. It should be the proper utilization of the whole individual for the absolute benefit of the community." Unquote. Such an opinion on the individual was about as far removed from libertarian as you could possibly get. Unquote. Book reference. 2018 in Cuba looks a lot different than the 1960s in Cuba. Today, we have small steps being taken, like the recent opening of an anarchist library and social space there, funded by libertarians and anarchists around the world. Overall, though, the government continues to repress and punish dissent and public criticism on the island. The 2018 report by Human Rights Watch, yes, we know, details some of the tactics employed by the government, including beatings, public shaming, travel restrictions, and termination of employment. The prisons are overcrowded, and prisoners often have to work long days, including scores of political prisoners being held there. Those who criticize the government or engage in hunger strikes and other forms of protest often endure extended solitary confinement, beatings, restrictions on family visits, and have been denied medical care. In terms of work, Cuba continues to violate conventions established specifically regarding the freedom of association, collective bargaining, protection of wages, and prohibitions on forced labor. While the law technically allows the formation of independent unions, in practice, Cuba only permits one confederation of state-controlled unions, the Workers' Central Union of Cuba. One can only imagine what the future holds for this library and social space in Cuba, but it's exciting to see. Of note, the music scenes of hip-hop and punk rock music in Cuba are intriguing to look at when considering freedom of expression. Many of the popular artists push the boundaries of what can be said without getting yourself in trouble, although there are examples of it happening. Porno para Ricardo was one such punk rock group that made the headlines for causing a stir. The group gets its name from the Cuban law outlawing pornography on the island and one famous connoisseur named Richard, who kept getting in trouble for having porn, hence the name Porno for Richard. Cuban hip-hop also has a strong following and artists who have tested the prohibitions of free speech, directly talking about the difficult situation of living there, among other things. Over the years, especially more recently, it seems, many of these artists have left the island for other locations, mainly the United States. Among what some may call the Cuban counterculture, you have one large group termed Los Frikis by the police and others. Think of it as the youth, the skater kids, punk rock and hip-hop, and those interested in alternative ideas. Back when I was on the island, one could visit the streets of 23 y Hay, 23 and G, also known as the Parque de los Raqueros, or Park of the Rock and Rollers, on the weekend nights and mingle with a large gathering of Los Frikis sprawled out down the street and eventually meeting the ocean at the Malecón, or walkway along the ocean. Perhaps coming to anarchism in Cuba is much more rank and file, but the countercultures also seem very strong and full of energy. Like all things, it's complex and not so easy to simply put into categories or talk about on this podcast. As mentioned earlier, conversations at the universities can also be limited, but then again, at the same time, I knew of an anarchist professor from Russia who would give talks to the students there. Maybe it's a bit of who you are and how you say it. Cuba is in a unique situation right now. Hopefully these past two brief editorials have shown a little bit of light on a place often mysterious to anarchists in North America. Much more waits to be said. Until then, see you later, ACR.
What's new this week? Indonesia, anarchist in trouble, Brian Valentino needs our support. From n-contrainfo.espiv.net. Quote, our comrade, Brian Valentino, is being held in Polda Prison, Yogyakarta, the main police headquarters of Yogyakarta, the special feudal region within Central Java Territory. Since the day of his arrest, May 1st, until May 16th, our comrade, who has been beaten and tortured, has been denied his rights for legal advocate or lawyer. Ever since he was arrested, it's been 15 days of interrogation without the company of a lawyer or advocate. Neither police nor legal aid have given us a clear reason for this, so we're not sure whether it's the police or the legal advocate who refused to help him. We received information from Brian Valentino's dad, who's just visited him after a week, and he made sure that Brian was the only one of the arrestees who hasn't been given any legal aid for 15 days. We urge to comrades nationally and internationally to strengthen solidarity with Brian Valentino, our dear anarchist friend, who has been refused his rights for legal aid. We are not limiting the solidarity. It can be legal or whatever. Unquote. A link is provided for donations.
Second Annual International Day of Solidarity with Eric King. His story. From supporterickking.org. This is Eric's personal story of his arrest, and it demonstrates his humor, humility, and steadfastness, given that he is telling the story from the guts of the prison system. Quote, when I arrived in prison, I had no support system. There was no money waiting for me. There weren't people spreading word to help me or get information out. No one let the community know this was a Ferguson Solidarity Act. My complete narrative in that first month or so was dictated by the media, and I was painted as a mentally ill jackass, which wasn't okay with me. I spent 2 years pre-trial unable to give words or explanation. So this is my story. My narrative of the events that happened and why they happened, and what has happened since. Unquote.
Munich, Germany. French consulate vandalized in solidarity with the ZAD. From Act for Freedom Now. Short communique on an action with red paint. Quote, we are in solidarity with the opposition of the ZAD against the eviction and also with the strikes and resistance in schools, factories, and on the street against Macron's neoliberal policy of dismantling social rights and tightening state control. We also greet all immigrants who are fighting for a life of dignity and self-determination and the right to freedom of movement, unquote.
Grenoble, France. Fascinating and Miserable. April 16th, 2018. Via Act for Freedom Now from anarchija.net. A longer communique on an action against an Apple store and some offices. Quote, let's start by saying that the distinction between public and private is an artifice of social domination. The leftists fell into the trap. The anarchists didn't. Everything is private. Our public is no less than the private that belongs to the state. Any landlord, elected or not, will always be our enemy. Private implies privation, of a roof in this case. We are left with nothing but the streets, fields, occupied places, or the forced acceptance of the racket set up by the landlord's order, unquote.
Announcing the formation of the Anarchist Union of Afghanistan and Iran from asranarchism.com, a site that I cannot read. This announcement, however, is in English and is very brief for an announcement of a union. Quote, this union is a free and voluntary agreement, and each individual or group will continue to operate independently in addition to being in the union. In the union, all anarchist tendencies, except for religious pacifist and so-called capitalist anarchists, have the potential to volunteer. All persons and groups are required to sign any call or announcement with the name of the union. If no collective agreement is reached, each individual or group can independently and with the name or group itself sign the item. At the beginning of the formation of the union, the highest level of cooperation will be in the joint signing of the Union of Anarchists. Over time, with more familiarity with individuals and groups, there will be a possibility to expand the level of cooperation, unquote. I look forward to hearing more about this group. Maybe it will be amazing.
Prosecutors caught withholding evidence in J20 case, from its going down by Unicorn Riot. Evidence that the government has not been playing by its own rules. A video was discovered to have a significant bit removed when the prosecutors said nothing important had been changed. Good news for defendants, fairly irrelevant for the bigger issue of the fact that these folks were arrested under bullshit charges in the first place. But I'm no lawyer, so what do I know?
Review, The Next Revolution by Murray Bookchin. From anarchism.pageabode.com by Anarcho. Anarcho's anarchism is pretty far from mine, so usually the benefit for me of reading his reviews is pretty meta, like questions of writing, what makes a good review, etc. This review of a new compilation of Bookchin's writings from both before and after Bookchin's split with Anarchy is a case in point, as the benefit for me is pondering some of the questions Anarcho raises that go well beyond either Bookchin or Anarcho. For example, the question of how to integrate someone's ideas and writings when they have changed dramatically over time. What it means to choose which ideas to embrace and which to discard, as if ideas were not connected to each other with threads both rational and irrational. Quote, I still remember the joy I experienced reading post-scarcity anarchism 30 years ago. Here was someone who both understood anarchism and built upon it. Yet, in the last decade of his life, he produced works which were marred by anti-anarchist tirades, which he surely knew were nonsense. This leaves us with a conundrum. If you utilize his earlier works, could not his later works be quoted to show that even a leading anarchist eventually saw its deep flaws? If you embrace his later anti-anarchist works, how could you reference in good faith his earlier contributions? Unquote. Anarcho doesn't exactly answer this, but I'd rather make my own answer anyway.
Organizing Beyond Organizations. Good news stories from Spain and Taiwan. From C4SS. This is someone else talking about a Gillis presentation on why meetings suck. I tried to listen to video of the presentation, but didn't get very far. The author of the piece, after plugging the company they work for, complains that Gillis doesn't, quote, offer more light at the end of the tunnel, unquote. I'm out.
On Slavery, Nat Turner, John Brown, and Drones, a statement for June 11. From june11.noblogs.org by Sean Swain. Sean continues to challenge all of us on the outside to step up our game. Quote, at any rate, as fate will have it, in 2017, when I undertook a 50-day hunger strike, those home addresses of prison officials were still posted. I have it on good authority that prison officials receive death threats at their homes at all hours of the day and night, phoned in from, quote, exotic area codes. I have also heard a rumor that at one of those state terrorists' residences, an item of property of significant value somehow ended up getting torched. I don't know whose home, and I don't know whether the significantly valued property was a house or a car or even a barbecue grill, but I know this. After that piece of property got torched, state terrorists began negotiating an end to my hunger strike, and I got all of my communications restored. As a side note, I have also heard a rumor, no telling how true this is, that blood evidence was found at the state terrorist residence where property was torched. The state tested it and discovered the DNA was mine. Not sure how something like that could happen, as I clearly have an alibi. I think it would take a pretty elaborate and complicated plan for anybody to have gotten my blood out of a maximum security prison to smear it around at a crime scene. Unquote.
On Hate, the Hamilton Police and Mexican Food from North Shore Counter Info. This reports that the Circle A is no longer supposed to be a hate symbol, and recounts a story from 2009 about Hamilton Police, including anti-cop graffiti and reports on hate crime. That is, the graffiti was reported as hate crimes against them. There's not really any Mexican food in the story. Bad headline.
An anarchist response to far-right Professor Jordan Peterson from It's Going Down, which seems to be having an unusually anarchist-relevant week. This story might be most significant for the comments responding to it, which, once one gets past the LeWay trolling call and response, has some interesting points from a few anons. Bellamy of FRR, nice to see him around a bit more, and Circle A Critic. Bellamy, in particular, has usually got at least one tongue in his cheek. Quote, in this edition of Anyone Who Disagrees With Me is Alt-Right slash Far-Right slash Fascist, one of the clearest examples of a classical liberal, a true Schlesinger's Rital Center type liberal, is called far-right because he dislikes and critiques social justice ideology? I have a hard time believing this author has actually delved into Peterson's work, and I wonder how this article passed the IGD editorial board. Unquote.
Media, announcing Blackseed 6, Full Spectrum Maternity. From Blackseed, quote, we celebrate the victory of the Elwha River, while keeping clear in our mind that that victory, that ecosystem's return, can only come at the cost of other ecosystems. That is the way of the civilization that surrounds and informs us. That victory is both real and not real. In a world in which floating continents of plastic and miles of fishing nets denude the oceans, in which ongoing oil spills in Africa have no one even attempting to clean them up, in which toxic waste is buried or dumped offshore by the multi-ton load, etc. The very real successes happen in a context of overwhelming poison, misery, and extinction, and cannot be said to offset them. Unquote. The comments for this story are funny, mostly because the very first one is by someone who energetically demonstrates that he didn't read the thing he's responding to. Fun!
Planning the Insurgency Block by Block, an hour and 37 minutes. From The Final Straw, an interview with TL, main artist and designer of Block by Block, a semi-cooperative strategy board game. Sean Swain starts at about 4 minutes and talks about, quote, court sucking, unquote, and gives amazing advice on how and why to file personal suits against cops. I hope only our friends are listening to this advice. In the TL talk, game development as a learning tactic for political and rebellious people is fascinating, and Burst is a good interviewer. The explanation of this game, which can be downloaded and printed out from a publisher's website for free, demonstrates some really interesting thought, as well as some simplistic thinking. But the fundamental premise is interesting, that what we need is not necessarily or usually more information, but more imagination, a loosening of the boundaries of what we mostly already accept as reality and existing boundaries. It's disappointing that TL talks about this as fooling people, that is, sliding through people's defenses, rather than empowering their imaginations, but I can like his practice more than his expressed theory. It gets even more engaging when TL starts talking about the limitations of fully cooperative gaming, although again, his critique is disconcertingly leftist, as are the quote-unquote good guy options in the game. Oddly, I don't think I heard the word fun once in the entire broadcast.
Black and Green Podcast 8. May 6, 2018, plus old episodes. To make up for no Jay-Z this week, here are multiple episodes, 3 through 8, and 8 is in two parts, of Kevin Tucker's podcast. Most of them are an hour, one is an hour and 20 minutes. Kevin takes on missionaries, racism, genocide, and other issues that are very controversial for anarchists.
The Suwa Show, Lazad, an hour, an Australian anarchist radio show. This is an episode all about the ZAD. Suwa stands for Squatters and Unwaged Workers Airwaves. This episode is a talk with Amy and Jack, two Australian activists who visited the ZAD. They explain what the ZAD is, how other ZAD-esque areas have been started around France against dams, tourist projects, etc. Mildly goofy but informative, including some information about the recent infighting. The call-in sound was fuzzy.
A Sea of Red in the Midst of a Worker Rebellion, 41 minutes from It's Going Down. This episode features a talk with Alfredo from Occupied Southwest Distro on the, quote, Red for Ed, unquote, campaign to increase the salaries of Arizona teachers that turned into a strike. Did I say that this week IGD has more anarchist content? I'm sorry. Crudo tries to bring it back at the end, but it's been over 35 minutes about the strike and organizing, so it's kind of a single anarchist cherry on a big ol' liberal cake.
I haven't seen you in many a year. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake, baked a cake, baked a cake. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Topic of the week, the mechanics of conversation. How can we have good conversations? Discourse can be challenging, even while talking with an agreeable audience who share an intellectual lineage. But what makes a good conversation turn bad, or worse, boring? There is a centuries-old history of conversation. But while there is much written about anarchist manners, prescribed principles and actions and those to avoid, there is little content regarding the mechanics of conversation from an anarchist perspective. Specialization has made conversation a chore. It can take many lengthy conversations to define terms with someone we share context with, and even more when we converse across disciplines. While some see the efforts that conversation takes as worthwhile, others choose isolation. Is conversation the foundation of our culture? If it is, then the value of practice seems evident. But how can we avoid the traps consistent with bad discourse? There may be cognitive biases, fallacies, and rhetorical devices that can make discourse manipulative rather than informative or useful, and our ability to identify the mechanics at play can make the difference between an enjoyable or a regrettable conversation. What are the mechanics of good conversation, and what expectations seem reasonable? Join the first conversation on this topic Saturday, May 26th at 2 p.m. Eastern at irc.anarchyplanet.org. Ariel, what are the mechanics of conversation?
I don't know. Or, I don't know if I know the answer to that question. I don't know if I think about conversation in terms of mechanics. I mean, I guess maybe I do. I think a good conversation requires... I don't think it requires agreement. I think it requires some understanding. I think it absolutely requires good faith, and that's something that we don't have the most often. Partly because I think people aren't clear, and partly because I think people are confused. So, I mean, I think people aren't clear in why they're in a conversation, what they want out of a conversation, the biases that they're bringing to the conversation that matter. But also, I think frequently because people don't actually know, which I suppose one could argue that is good faith. But it's ignorance, and that's not necessarily the same thing. But regardless, And in fact, we have an excellent example of agreement actually not creating good conversation at all, where frequently the most uninteresting and unengaged reading groups are ones where everyone likes the reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
And no one really has anything to say other than, yeah, that was good. Yeah, I thought he was smart. Yeah. And they'll read a passage. I like that passage. And other people will go, oh, yeah, I like that passage too. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you've got for 2 hours.
So perhaps the thesis you're building is that sometimes conversation requires disagreement. Like, for a conversation to be enjoyable for you, you need a little pizzazz, a little cayenne, a little zippity-doo-dah.
Tension. I think the tension created by disagreement is more interesting. I think when you have to work for your position, for your words, I think it being harder makes you better. And I think you have to, if you are acting in good faith, you have to reach to the person that you disagree with, and really listen to them for it to be an actual engaged conversation and not just a, you know, you're an idiot off. And I personally like that. Those are the conversations that I find the most interesting. But I always find conversations interesting in which I'm going to learn something, I think. It's less fun for me to be the knowledgeable one.
Oh, really? You don't like to, you don't like to lead a conversation?
No, I don't mind leading a conversation, but it's not... Another way to put it is, I don't want to be the smartest person in the room.
Well, that's interesting.
I don't get anything out of that.
Hmm. And you think that people who do get something out of it?
I think that there is a personality type that does, for sure. I know plenty of people who make a point to make sure that they're always the smartest person in the room, at least when, you know, when it might matter, when somebody else might be watching.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, but I like learning something. I like having to tackle something new. I like having to really kind of dig in and fight for my words. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when I hear this conversation, I don't think this is a particularly anarchist conversation. Like, in other words, I don't think there's something about an anarchist conversation that is exceptional.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, and so in that way, the question of, just the core questions here are don't seem to be anarchist questions to me. They seem to be sort of like figuring out the topography of conversations in the modern world.
Sure.
And, you know, for me, that conversation begins with, do you think that there's something different about a face-to-face conversation than there is about an online conversation, or, you know, like the IRC room, for instance, versus comments on ANews?
Are you asking, is there something different, or are you asking, is one better than the other?
Well, I think both questions are totally appropriate. And for me, I don't think that online conversations, I would actually merit the term conversation.
Sure.
And the person who wrote this, I don't want to assign attributes to them that they haven't declared themselves, but I find there are some people who don't think that face-to-face conversations are better.
Sure.
Than,
I realize that.
Than online conversations. And I do.
Yeah.
But I say that with the constraint of, I think that they're better from the perspective of what I want to get out of a conversation.
Right.
I come away a better person and more happy after a face-to-face conversation in a way that I don't over the internet. But that said, if what it is that I'm trying to get is functional, if I'm trying to get an answer to a question, if I'm trying to just fire and forget, online is far superior.
Sure.
And so that's how I sort of frame the conversation frame this topic, because, you know, I guess I don't have problems finding conversations in my life. I'm not necessarily looking to have better conversations. I'm surrounded by people I like.
Right.
By and large. And so this question is sort of like, it's a distant question for me. And I think that a lot of anarchists have the opposite problem, where they don't have much of a face-to-face life that's satisfying for them. And instead, what they're looking for is to increase the value of the life that they can achieve, which is quote-unquote conversation over the wire.
Sure.
And that's a harder question to me, because I think that there's plenty of evidence that we don't live in a time of quality internet conversations.
Yeah, I'm going to back up for a minute. I absolutely understand that if you want to create a hierarchy of conversation, there are people who will disagree with me about whether or not face-to-face conversation or personal, you know, voice conversation or conversation over the phone versus combination of the internet, which is better. That's fine. I don't know how to talk to, I don't know what to say to anyone who's going to say that it's all the same, that there isn't a difference between those. There's fundamentally differences in so many ways. Coming of age in anarchy, I feel like I watched the rise of forums and bulletin boards, and I was a lurker in all of them.
Yeah.
and a participant in almost none of them.
Right.
And fundamentally, I felt like I didn't know how to have a conversation in that forum.
Right.
And I really don't feel like I ever learned how. But they were fantastic because they were people actually engaging in lengthy, in good faith, you know, struggling, sure. trying, you know, online typed conversations, which I feel like I don't see in the online world that I live in now. But that online world is mostly social media. I don't hang out in Reddit and I don't hang out in Tumblr. And I'm not sure where people go to find those things. I don't think that's what people do on Facebook. And I have, yeah, and I like you. And of course, I'm surrounded by people that I like and that I want to talk to. And so conversation does mean something in particular to me. And by my own definition of it, it basically can't mean anything but, I won't say face-to-face because I'll take a phone conversation, even though nobody does that anymore. I prefer face-to-face, but I'll take a phone conversation. That's okay. But anything outside of that, that's not actually a conversation for me.
Yeah.
And I'm also willing to chalk that up to I'm just old.
Sure.
But I don't think I don't think there's anything specifically anarchist about that.
Being old? No, I don't either.
And I in my experience, for the most part, most anarchists that disagree with each other actually don't want to have good conversations. They want to be right and be right at you.
Yeah, I mean, that's hard because nowadays, I would say that most anarchists who disagree with each other don't have to deal with each other.
That's true.
I mean, especially, you know, here in the Bay Area, there are enough anarchists that I basically don't need to associate with a red anarchist or a, you know, like the nature of the Antifa disagreement over the past couple of years has meant that I haven't seen a lot of those people in years.
It's true.
And that's strange. You know, like literally I will see them at the book fair in September. Last year I didn't go.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah, that's a big difference. And so, you know, if I were in a small town, I would have to engage with them, you know, more frequently and
sure.
and whatnot. But even there. But let's actually go to the heart of what it is that this topic of the week is trying to ask.
Which is, I don't remember
now. What are the mechanics of what makes good conversations? And to me, good faith, a physical presence with somebody, and some catalyst, some motivator.
Right.
That, you know, we can or cannot disagree on or whatever. But I mean, to me, that isn't the question I have. And I think that the lament from the asker is that they think that we're not having good conversations because we have bad technique. And I don't think that that has anything to do with it.
Oh. Huh.
And that's because for them, they're defining conversation as being conversation on IRC, conversation comment section, conversation face-to-face. I think that they're saying conversation spans all of those.
Sure.
And I'm not sure I agree. I would basically call right. those other things something else.
Yeah, I would call them something else. And I don't ever feel like that there is an agreed upon or an understood technique or protocol or kind of terms of engagement in those environments. When you're talking about IRC or yeah, social sure, media sure. or...
There are people who are just there to troll.
Right.
Just there to be disruptive.
And so, I guess, I mean, for me, it reinforces my position that this is actually counterintuitive too. But if that's the place where you live and that's what you want to do, I don't know what you do about that. Because historically, we have made our own spaces so yeah. that we can actually have the conversations that we
yes.
want to have.
Yes.
Right?
I would almost call it a life project.
Right. But if you're insistent on doing it on Facebook.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Which sounds lame, but I don't. Because I.
But I mean. But
I just ceded that territory so long ago.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, for me, Facebook is to be funny mm-hmm. and to enjoin people to join the conversation elsewhere.
That's yeah, it. For sure.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Find me at littleblackcart.com.
Yeah, which works sometimes, but yeah.
Arguably, it works quite well.
Well, yes, in that instance. So far.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Dim, written by Jackie, narrated by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Rosinante. We thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.